Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And I got to tell you, I have a very good guest today, but I was just in the hallway out here, and it always annoys me. Now, we record in a building, and there's a law office, and there's this guy, I guess he's in a deposition, and he's just standing in the middle of the hall, and I bump into him, and he doesn't say, excuse me. And that just pisses me off. What really bothered me was, this guy was very on the heavy side, and he's wearing a black suit and a hat, thinking he was John Hamm in Mad Men. It's like, no, he probably just eats ham. I hate rudity, people, so I'm going to say. I'm in a weird mood. I've been flying a lot, but I have a great guest today. And I want to tell you people about this gentleman. I listen to a sports show called Tony Bruno. I've listened to it for years. And I used to hear this gentleman call in all the time. And he was just a really good guest. And I didn't know, first of all, who he was at the time. But then when I looked through and I saw him years ago, Zach Galifianakis was on Esquire, which I get. And in the magazine, he had said, this gentleman is the funniest guy out there because he has no fear on stage. And then I Am Comic, I'm watching that. And my friend Jordan Brady, who's a guest of Cooper Talk a lot, he directed it. And he was in my guest was in a scene with Todd Glass, who I've known for years from Philadelphia. So I was like, I got to get this guy on my show. So here's my guest. It's Brody Stevens. How you doing, Brody?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
I like it. I was reading about you, how your name originally is Stephen Brody.
Yeah, that was my original name. Still my real name.
Right.
But I go by, people like saying Brody. Right. You know, growing up, nobody ever thought they always thought my first name was Brody. People like saying Brody.
See, that's like me with Cooper. Everyone thinks my first name is Cooper. And my mom had said years ago, change your name to Cooper Stevens. But I said that to, like, Brody Stevens sounds good. Cooper Stevens, I just sound like a...
Cooper Stevens sounds good.
I don't know. So okay, now I was watching. First of all, I want to talk about, how did you get involved with Tony Bruno? I mean, I know you're a big sportsman. I want to hear about your baseball, too, because you're a big fan and you played baseball.
I played baseball in college. I got involved with Tony Bruno working at the Best Damn Sports Show. I was the audience warm-up guy there. That was on Fox Sports, and it ran from 2001 to 2006. And I did about 1,000 shows of audience warm-up. And Tony would come in and be a guest host on the show, fill in for Chris Rose. So I got to know Tony through Best Damn Sports Show.
Okay.
And then he would go on and do radio here locally, and then he did Fox Sports Radio. Then I started calling in, and they put me on right away. I had a good relationship with Tony. They let me go on and banter, and it was a real good time. So I know he's moved on to Philadelphia, and I could probably still call the show, but I feel... Yeah, I listen on my regular radio.
Right.
So I call from my car. I would call, you know, when I get home and that kind of stuff. But it was a great experience. And Tony is a fantastic guy.
Now, what was it like doing warm up for Best Damn Sports Show? I mean, because now, did you get that possibly because people knew you, or they knew you had a sports background also, or how did that come about?
That came about from me doing shows on Wednesdays and Sundays, I think it was, in the Gower Gulch over there on Hollywood and Gower.
Okay.
And there was a show, a bringer show that I would do when I first got into town back in 2000. And I would do this show, and Rich Williams, one of the performers there, he said that he was working on this Fox Sports pilot, which was like Saturday Night Live for sports.
Okay.
So he was telling me about that, and Phil Henry was involved with it, and some other people, Deacon Jones, and other baseball players and all that stuff. Anyway, so he was working on that, and he knew I had a sports background, but that wasn't necessarily the clincher. It was more like, yeah, they're doing comedy, because he had seen me do comedy all the time. And then one afternoon, I just happened to call him out of the blue, and he said, hey, Brody, tomorrow we're having a test show at Fox for this Best Damn Sports Show. Do you want to come in and do warm-up? I don't know if you're going to get paid. You may or may not. I don't know if the show is going to happen beyond tomorrow.
Right.
So why don't you come in? So I came in. I did the warm-up. There's like 40 people there, and I did a good job. And then they said, okay, we're going to do it again tomorrow. So I did it again the next day, and I did a good job. And then they said, the show's going to happen. We're going to use an audience, and if you want to do it, you can. So basically, that's how I got the job. Started out right from the beginning, and Rich Williams, who is a comedian, who now lives back in Albany, New York, he kind of got me in there, at least for the warm-up. And I ended up doing about 1,000 shows. And so that's where I got to meet Tony Bruno, and I got to meet Mike Goldberg from UFC. I mean, tons of people.
Right. So that must have been great because you're a sports fan. That must have been just cool for you because you're basically, I mean, they're your peers at that time. It's not like, you know, it's not like you're someone coming up and going, hey, I'm a big fan. It's like they're fans of yours because you're doing a good job warming up. That must be a feel good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like these guys know that. I mean, Mike Goldberg always tells me, like, I helped him out big time. You know, he would come in and he would host the show, and I'd get the audience behind him and giving him support, and he always remembers that. Now he's, you know, a big-time UFC guy doing the shows with Joe Rogan. So just getting to meet everybody like Pete Rose and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, all these actors, all these interesting college football players, baseball players, all that stuff. And it was, for me, Michael Strahan, you know, who now is with Michael and Kathy, yeah. Michael and Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a great experience for me. And I ended up doing 1,000 shows. And then they started cutting back on the audience and all that. So that was, it was a good run.
So now you're a baseball player. You're a big baseball fan. Now you played... You when in high school, were you, and like when I was growing up, every like baseball player who was like, I believe you were a pitcher.
I was a pitcher.
And when I was younger, it was like, first of all the little league guys who play pitcher, there was a rule you could only pitch a certain games, and then they play outfield, and they'd all be like, the pitchers were like the cream of the crop. I mean, we had the guys who would just crank home runs. It was very weird that when they're young, they play everything. As they get older, because they pitch, they don't bat as much. Were you like a standout when you were younger in little league? Did people say, God, this guy's good? Or I mean, what was your transgression in that?
I was good in little league. I always had a good arm. Up until college, I threw the ball pretty hard, and I was not the greatest pitcher. I never had great coaching in Little League until a couple coaches got a hold of me, and they helped me out, and I had some good games. But for the most part, I had a really good arm. And then hitting, I didn't love hitting, but I had good power. So I was pretty much a pitcher in first baseman, sometimes outfielder, but I would say mostly a pitcher most of the time. But I had good power. And then when I went on to high school, I just kept pitching, and I still hit also, but I was still mostly focusing on pitching. And I had that strong arm, and I still do to this day, just something about my arm that I threw a pretty good fastball.
What else did you throw? What did you throw in the mix? Fastball and what else? What were some of your
pitches? I had a good curveball and at times a good changeup. And then when I got to college, I started throwing a forkball or a split finger type pitch, which was sometimes good, but sometimes not. But my best pitch was definitely fastball, and I had a good curveball.
Okay, so you went into college, you played. Now, did you get hurt? Is that why you stopped playing? Or
yeah, I had elbow surgery back in 91. You know, it's bad mechanics. I probably had bad mechanics in Little League, bad throwing mechanics in high school, and I had bad throwing mechanics in college, and they would pretty much broke down my motion, broke everything down, and got it to where I was utilizing my body and freeing up my arm to throw the ball even better. But even with that, I still had bad mechanics, and I was putting extra strain on my elbow. So when I started filling out and getting stronger, that torque on my elbow caused problems.
Okay.
So that's when I ended up getting surgery.
So, okay, so how does a guy who plays baseball, plays college baseball, end up in comedy? It's not like you see people, it's like, you know, guys who, you know, weren't really good at sports. You know, they always, when they're younger, they wanted to be funny. How did you end up doing stand-up, and what age did you start doing it?
Well, I didn't start doing it until after college, so I was around 23 at that point. You know, when you're playing baseball, you're in college sports or you're on a team, there's a lot of hazing and jock humor and not highbrow humor.
Right.
And I guess I was funny, but I didn't feel like I was funny. I got picked on more than anything, you know, and guys would joke with me. Looking back on it, that means that they liked me. Generally speaking, if somebody's joking with you, giving you a hard time, that means they like you.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't feel good when it's happening.
Especially when you're young. But it's different when you're young, because I tell this story a few times about these guys who stole my football. I still remember those guys. When I saw them years ago, I was a dick to them. But at that time, they were being mean. But when you get older, I think most of the times people are if they like you, they're giving you a hard time.
Because they like you. And I felt like by the time I was in college, these guys were mature enough to where it wasn't malicious, but it was, you know, it could still be annoying.
Right.
And I would get along with certain pitchers and certain players, but I was not necessarily the funniest guy on the team, but I had a personality. And it's kind of like it is today. People don't always get me at first. The coaches didn't get me at first. Maybe the players didn't get me at first. And then later on in that first year I was there, they started warming up to me. So for me, how I got into comedy was the last year or so in college, I had some extra classes to take, and I remember some of the athletes, we would go to study hall, so you'd be there with football players, basketball players, volleyball, all that stuff, and I would get laughs up there just being myself, away from the baseball field, in the study hall, I would get laughs, and I remember when the football players said, hey, Brody, you're funny, you should do stand-up comedy. I never thought about doing stand-up comedy. I always thought it would be cool to be a famous actor. Who wouldn't want right. that? But my strength was being naturally funny. Whereas baseball, I had a good arm, but I had to really work hard just to be on the team. Whereas comedy came naturally for me. And when you're around baseball guys, I have to be in a good mood, you know, to be funny. So if I'm in a bad mood, I'm not necessarily funny. When I'm in a positive mood, I could be funny and feed off that. So my last year or so at ASU, I had some extra elective classes, and I said, why don't I try some acting stuff? So I took an acting class, and I went in there, and it was just so supportive. It was, you know, mixed. It was girl, you know, guys and girls, right. and it was just, like, supportive. It was so I felt it was a breath of fresh air to be away from the baseball field and to be in a acting situation.
So it's a whole different group of people, too. I mean, it's different. I mean, from the jock mentality. I mean, and you're what, 40?
42.
Okay, and I'm 47. So back when I was in high school and college, there wasn't as many actors. It's not like now. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, but it's different. It's just a different community, because from the jock community to the acting community, it's probably a bit. I mean, you're going back and forth two different worlds there.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, the jock is it's a tough world. It's harsh, you know, and there's not hazing, but there is, you know, and there's, you know, it's that ripping mentality, right. you know, they love ragging on each other. That's the whole, especially in college baseball, that was a big element of it. So when I did that acting class, it was just such a fresh experience for me. Plus there's cute girls in right. there. They think you're funny, even though I wasn't trying to be funny. And then I took another acting class, which was all right. And then when I was done with school, basically I felt as though I could go into coaching if I wanted to. Because I was coaching, I was actually doing some coaching with the Arizona State team once I was done playing. Okay. Even though I still had a year left of eligibility, I was able to help out with the team.
All right, well, that's good.
But I didn't want to go into coaching. I felt like I need to follow this instinct of entertainment. And when I moved back to Los Angeles, where I'm from, here in the Valley, I worked on a student film. I just wanted to, like, learn everything I could about show business. And I couldn't tell my parents that, oh, I want to be an actor. I want to be a famous actor. Right. I just want to be an actor.
Why not? Because it's so L.A. or because you grew up here. Or it's, you know, I mean, it's like when I told my parents, you know, I want to do stand up. It's my dad, because I have a degree in college, a business management degree. And my dad was just like, I could tell he's pissed until the first time he saw my pay. I swear my name was like this, so tiny in the Philadelphia Inquirer for the comedy section. Then it was okay. That happens to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't. I spent my whole life playing baseball, and I was somewhat successful. And for me to go, okay, I want to be an actor, I just couldn't really say that.
Right.
But I could work at it. I could, you know, I'll work on a student film and learn about filmmaking just to fill up my resume and to see what it's like to work on a film. It was a student film that I worked on. And at that time, I was also taking a comedy workshop. I felt like, okay, I'm going to handle this comedy potential like I handled baseball. And I enjoyed structure. You know, when you're playing college baseball or going to school, you have structure.
Right.
So when I was out of school, I had to create the structure. So part of it was signing up for a workshop where I would know I would go every week and do comedy in a supportive environment. And I also wanted to see if I enjoyed it. You know, maybe I would try the comedy, and again, it's not for me. But every week, driving to the UCLA to go do that workshop, I got excited. It was okay. Like, okay, I like this. This is, and then I would go up on stage and perform 2 or 3 minutes or whatever in your class.
In the classroom.
Yeah, okay. A supportive environment. Your classmates would say, you know, what's funny or what they like about you or whatever. And it just gave me confidence. And it also reassured me that comedy was a strength of mine, and it came naturally, which was a nice relief. So I could be funny, being myself, and I was getting that reaction from my classmates and the instructor. So we did our final show at the Comedy Store. I did well, and then I felt like I was a comedian. And then I did an open mic out in the Valley, out in Chatsworth, and it was just like not a great environment. It was, okay. You know, an open mic.
Yeah.
So it was more like, this is reality. This is what it's like to get started in this business. You got to do open mics. And I was here in L.A., and I did the open mic, and it was just like not enjoyable. And I go, okay, I get this. I know what I have to do. but I don't want to go through this route with this kind of environment necessarily. So I went back to UCLA and I took a business of comedy class. I felt like, okay, let me learn more about comedy.
Okay.
And that time I was still working on these films, but I knew that I didn't want to be a key grip or I didn't want to be a gaffer. I wanted to be the talent. That was my strength. So I went back and I learned the business of comedy class. And the instructor, he told me, he said, you know, if you want to get into comedy, you want to be a stand-up, you got to leave Los Angeles. You can't start here. Don't start here. It's not a good idea. And that, he put that in my head, is like, to get out of L.A. And I was kind of spinning my wheels at the time, doing little day jobs here and there. I didn't have a support system in terms of other comedians. I was just getting started. So when he said, look into moving out to a smaller market, that really, stuck with me.
All right. So where'd you go?
Well, I went up to Seattle. I had family up in Seattle. It was either go to Phoenix, where I had college friends, but not much of a comedy scene there. I'd never done comedy other than just comedic stuff in the class. And Seattle, which had family, and there was a more supportive art scene up there, which I wasn't aware of. So I researched it, and they said, why don't you come up here? It's very supportive. There's a lot of things to do. So in 1994, I drove up to Seattle. And I started doing open mics up there. And right away, there was audiences at the open mics. It was a more supportive community. I was able to find my voice. And then I started doing a cable access show.
What was the show about? Because I read because I always do research. I do the Wikipedia, I do this and that. And sometimes you can't, like, Wikipedia, you never know. But it said you did a cable access. What was it, like the Brody show, or what was it?
It was Brody and Tana. It was me and my friend Tana, who's a Samoan guy, half Samoan. And we did a cable access TV show, and it was very popular up in Seattle. We did about 175 live shows. During the week, we would edit a little video or shoot a little something, and then we would do a live show. We would take phone calls. We had graphics. And the shows were a half hour, and I would sign up for my show, and then Tana would sign up for his show. So I would be on his, he would be on mine, and we basically got an hour of TV time between 8:30 and 11:30 on Seattle television. This is before DirecTV and all that. So we were on channel 29 of 63 channels. So people watched it up there, and King County Cable was the second largest audience in the country, prorated or whatever it was, second. It got a big audience, and people watched it. So I was like a little celebrity up there, and all the while I was doing stand-up comedy, and I got to a point of, you know, because that's where I started. I started my comedy up there. I mean, you could say I did a little bit in L.A., right. But I started up there. And after a couple years, you know, it's like, oh, they know me. They're not going to really give me a chance to, the club owners, to
go to that headlining level, go up, because that's, I think, a lot of times you start in your town and they don't let you grow in your town. Like when you started out years ago as an MC, it was so hard to be a feature. You had to go get feature work out of town, and then you can come back to Philly and get feature work.
Yeah, exactly. So I wasn't getting that kind of support. I mean, I did that cable access show. It was more popular than my stand-up. Definitely, I was seen by more people, and people loved it. But I also felt by doing that show, it was kind of bleeding into my comedy act. I felt like my comedy, my stage act, I wanted it to grow and blossom some more. And I wasn't getting that opportunity in Seattle. I was getting the opportunity to do the cable access show, which was fun and goofy and crazy and zany and, you know, all that. But my stand-up, I felt, was not developing the way I wanted it to develop. And people would say to me, Brody, you got to go to New York. You got to get out of Seattle and go to New York where you'd be appreciated. Because I wasn't ready to go back to L.A.
Okay.
I always wanted to go to New York since I was a kid. So I figure what better time than now to go to New York, having a voice, not necessarily honed, but having a comedic voice, go to New York, I had some friends out there, and just jump into the scene there. And that's what I did. I jumped into the open mic scene.
Now, what year was this? Wait, was this like late 90s?
Yeah, 97.
Okay, so the comedy boom was, the road thing was pretty much dilapidated, but the there was, like, anywhere in New York and any other place, there's always a great scene. So you went, now who were some of the guys when you went there? You started doing open mics. Now, did you start becoming a regular at clubs, or how did that work for you?
I did end up becoming a regular at Stand Up New York. I got kind of passed there where I would call in my avails and I would get like a late night spot. But in terms of the other clubs like the Comic Strip or Gotham or, you know, the Comedy Cellar or Boston Comedy Club or whatever clubs there were. I wasn't passed at them. In fact, I worked at the Comedy Cellar. I was a barker there because I thought it would lead to stage time.
Okay.
But it never did, and I was just intimidated by the booker. And when she hired me, she didn't, you know much of my comedy. She didn't probably even know I did comedy. But I was there to do the job, to bark and bring in the comedians. I mean, bring an audience for the comedians. And I watched the show. But that's another example of where first impressions, all those comedians that would see me barking, that was their first impression of me. And then, oh, Brody does comedy too. That's interesting. So it took a long time for these guys to come around and appreciate my comedy because most of the time they saw me barking at the Comedy Cellar. But my goal was to go from barking to getting on stage at the Comedy Cellar. But I just wasn't confident. I was intimidated by the booker, and I just never did it. But it's still a good experience.
Right. Now, you were a tour guide in New York? Was that true?
I worked at Radio City Music Hall. I was a tour guide, and that helped me with public speaking. That helped me with confidence in terms of connecting with schools, colleges, high schools, all on the East Coast. You know, I'm a West Coast guy,
right?
Even though I sound like I'm from the East Coast, but I'm a West Coast guy. So that was like a mental, not a mental block, but a mental hurdle I wanted to get over, like being funny to these kids from Virginia or funny from kids from Massachusetts or New Jersey or Long Island or whatever. And I was. I did a good job there. And I would do anywhere from 3 to 5 one-hour tours of Radio City Music Hall. And I would do that in the daytime or in the morning or whatever. And then I would wait tables, too, on those off days. And then at night, I would do comedy. I would do Sunday nights. I would do Surf Reality, which was a popular show. Faceboy ran it. And everybody got 8 minutes. And the show would start at 8, and it would go to sometimes 3 in the morning.
Okay.
And then I would do Collective Unconscious on Wednesday. That was a good open mic. And they had another open mic on Monday nights. And then I began my own room on Monday nights where I would host that. So I was, and then I would do Stand Up New York occasionally once or twice a week. I would show up there and get the last spot. So, yeah, I was honing my voice there in New York City.
Now, who were some of the guys that you were in your comics always look, hang out with certain comics, but did you start hanging out with some certain comics that you got along really well with in New York back then?
Yeah, guys like Judah Friedlander, Alex Sulkin, who now is a producer for Family Guy. He wrote Ted.
Okay.
So I'd hang out with Alec a lot. I would see the Sklar brothers. I would see Jeff Ross. I would see Dave Attell. I was hanging out with guys that are mostly writers, like Dan Cronin, who writes for Conan, and a lot of guys who ended up being writers for a lot of these shows, winning Emmy Awards. And I was in that group, kind of hanging out with those guys. But I was also my own individual performer. I still am today. I can kind of play an alternative room. I can play a regular room. I can play a hard room. So that was my strength. I was spread out, but that's appreciated by, you know, most of the circles.
Now, so you're sitting there in New York. So now you're honing your voice. You're getting stronger. Now, when do you sit there and say, okay, it's time for me to go back to L.A.?
Well, I kind of planned on being back in L.A. by the time I was 30. That was my goal. Like, okay, get back to L.A. when I'm 30. And then after 3 years, I felt like I honed my voice. And I saw some of my friends moving out to Los Angeles, and I kept in touch with them. And I felt like if I came out to Los Angeles, I had a marketable skill, which was comedy or public speaking or being a tour guide. And also I had the advantage of I had a place to stay out here. I knew my way around. I had a car here. I had everything set up for me to succeed when I came back home. So I came back in 2000. I was ready. You know, I was done with New York for living there. It was good for me. And I felt like a New Yorker. But at a certain point, I felt like, okay, there's, you know, just like Seattle. You get to a point in Seattle where, okay, it's time to move to New York. And then I was in New York, and I felt it was time to move to L.A. And I always wanted to come back here, and I came back here. And from right at that, and also what gave me that extra, you know, shot in the arm to move back, I started doing some better shows in New York. It wasn't just all open mics. I started doing Luna Lounge, which was a popular alternative show.
And right.
Dave Chappelle would be there, and Todd Barry, and Dave Attell, or I don't know if he did it, but a lot of good comedians. And I would host those shows and do spots occasionally, but that kind of like gave me the confidence. Like, well, Mark Maron was on the show also, and it would be like, you know, I'm holding my own with these guys. I'm not standing out like I don't belong. So it gave me confidence.
Okay.
So when I did those shows, I felt like at that point, okay, I could go out to L.A. with a marketable skill, have a marketable skill, place to live, etc. So I moved back out here in 2000. And at that point, I got Craig Kilborn's show, did stand-up on that.
Okay, so now you, when you move back, you start hitting the Comedy Store and stuff like that. I mean, that's where you got seen for, from Kilborn's people?
Yeah, the... Well, my friend Alex Sulkin went on to write for Kilborn, so he moved out to L.A., and I would send him tapes and stuff all the time back then. So they, and then when I would come back to L.A., I would visit the Kilborn studio and the staff. So they already knew me. So when I moved back to L.A., I already had an in there, and I got the gig to do stand-up, you know, my first national TV appearance.
Now, how'd you feel? Were you nervous, or, I mean, what was the whole deal now? I mean, because it's you're finally, I mean, you sit there and you look at yourself and go, I'm going to be on TV. I mean, you sit there, you busted your balls, you know, you were working hard, and it's getting paid off now. When you made that appearance, were you, like, pumped, or were you nervous, or what was your feeling before you went on your first national TV
Probably
show?
More nervous, but I was also excited about it. I wasn't petrified or terrified or anything like that. I felt like I could do a good job, and I did a good job. You know, I set up my set. We went over it, and, you know, they had the cue cards out there for me in case you forget anything. And I did a good job. I didn't crush, but I did a very good job. And I was happy with it. So that was a good experience for me. And then I also got Premium Blend on Comedy Central as well right around that time. So I had two TV credits pretty much right away once I moved back here to L.A. And by having those credits, yeah, it made it easier for me to get past at the Improv, the Laugh Factory, the Comedy Store. So I didn't have a difficult time getting into those clubs. I kind of rode that wave of the Kilborn and the Premium Blend spot on Comedy Central. So I did that, and then I also did Laugh Riots, which was a Comedy Central competition. I finished second in that.
Okay.
So I got seen by people, which was good. And then I was just doing, you know, certain open mics still and doing the Youth Hostel and picking up little shows here and there. And then I started...
The Youth Hostel sets. I used to do them for out here, because guy Miguel Fierro.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I went to it. And it's like, it's such a weird crowd, because it's like, because half the people don't speak English.
No.
And he's like, Steve, no, you do those pop culture references. You shouldn't do any of them because people won't get it. I'm like, well, there goes my act. You know what I mean? It's just, did you enjoy doing them? Do you think it made you as a stronger act, or do you just like getting stage time?
I think it made me a stronger act. I would do it on every Wednesday and Sunday night. That was on my schedule, Youth Hostel. And because they had a crowd in there, and it forced you to be funny. It forced you to connect with these Europeans and Australians and people from London and a few people that are from America, too. But it really forced you to be funny, be in the moment. And if you are going to do any kind of references, you had to kind of be careful, like stick with Universal Studios,
right,
and Hollywood, you know, Boulevard and that kind of thing. But it made you... Yeah, it made me a better comedian. When you're performing in front of these crowds, you have to kind of work on getting them and also show your natural comedy. And it made me feel like I had universal comedy, a universal touch. So that room definitely helped me, doing it on Wednesday and Sunday nights. It was a good workout room. And I was already passed at the Comedy Store, but it was a better experience for me to perform at the Youth Hostel. So I do the Youth Hostel. And I'd go hang out at the Comedy Store a little bit after, if I had a spot, or even if I didn't. And I wasn't getting that many spots anyway at that point. So the Youth Hostel helped me out. Doing these other shows around town, little one-off spots, and, you know, picking up stuff in the LA Weekly, going
right
to the show. And they go, hey, Brody, I'll put you on. And then I ended up getting the Chicago Comedy Festival. I did... I may have done another festival, but I did Chicago Comedy Festival. And then within a year, I got the job basically at Best Damn Sports Show. So I went within a year of being back out here, getting into the warm-up.
Okay, so I know you're friends with Zach.
I'm friends with Zach Galifianakis.
Now, how did you guys meet? I mean, it's been a long friendship. I mean, I saw the... By the way, people, that show's on HBO Go, right?
HBO Go, the digital platform.
They said on demand. I was pissed. I couldn't find it on demand.
Some on demand.
Okay, because it's not on Charter. So Charter, put the show on. I want to watch it. I watched it online, the first episode today. And Zach is one of the producers of it.
Yes.
Now, how did you meet Zach? And it seems like you guys have bonded really well, because, I mean, I saw you in the limo driver in Hangover 2. Was that?
That was due date.
Okay, and it was great. It was just because you're not. If you don't know people, look them up. Do you have a website?
I do, but it's not up and running like it should be. BrodyStevens.com. I mean, I think it's still up.
And the Twitter is, because you tweet a lot, and that's good.
Brody is me friend.
Follow him, people, and just you'll know. As soon as you see him, you know. Because you're some of those people, it's like, damn, because you were great in the movie. So people were like, you're like, you hear names, and you're like, oh, I know that guy. I know that guy. So how did you meet Zach?
I met Zach in New York, 1999. I would see him at Stand Up New York performing. I thought he was funny, and then I seen him a couple other venues, but we didn't hang out at all, really. I didn't know him, and he didn't know me other than me seeing him perform. And then when I moved out here in 2000, we would be on a couple of the same shows, small book shows around town. So I would see Zach at that. I always thought he was funny, and he would watch me perform. I guess he thought I was funny, but we weren't friends or really talk to each other. And then when we did that Chicago Comedy Festival, we ended up hanging out a little bit, went to the baseball game, we did some shows together. And at that point I said to Zach, like, let's take our friendship to the next level.
Okay.
So I would say around 2001 we started hanging out. I worked at Best Damn Sports Show, which I mentioned, and then after the shows a lot of times I'd just go to Zach's house and we would hang out and laugh and write jokes and he'd run things by me and all that stuff.
So I remember when Zach had a show. It was on VH1, I believe.
VH1 Late World with Zach, and I did the warm up on that.
Okay.
Until I got fired. I did get fired, not from Zach, but from the exact one of
why
the
why did you get fired?
He thought I scared the audience. But the audience, I knew the audience. They were from half of them I knew from just doing other shows around town at the Best Damn Sports Show. I was working the warm-up there and also was doing warm-up at the Man Show that season. And I knew the audience, so I was able to talk to them the way I could talk to them. But if somebody didn't know me, they would think, like, this guy's scaring the audience. So I got fired, actually, after first couple shows.
Really? That must have sucked.
Yeah, because I didn't expect it.
Because you knew the crowd. It's not like you're just going to be like a jerk to a bunch of people you didn't know. You knew a majority of them. They've seen you, and they know your sense of your style of humor. I mean, that must just piss you off when you're sitting there going, you know, what do these producers know? It's like, I'm successful. That's why you're doing three shows.
Yeah, it upset me definitely that, you know, they would not give me. Why don't you give me a note? You know, tell me, say, Brody, why don't you try and be a little nicer to the audience, or let's try this approach instead of just firing me. And Fred Graver was his name. He's at the Travel Channel. He fired me. And I did not, I mean, called my manager and had me fired. I was like shocked. I thought it was a joke because there was no indication that I was doing a bad job.
So now, but then you and Zach were bonding then. So then as Zach's career went on, it seems like he,
and Zach tried to get me back on the show, and I did. I ended up working a few more shows. And all the staff wanted me there.
It was just that one guy.
It was just the one guy.
That's funny.
And then they petitioned for me to get back, and I got back on the show, and I did a few more shows, and then the show was over. It lasted one season.
So now, okay, so so Zach's sitting there, and then Zach becomes super famous. Now, when it comes to you being in his movies, do you have to go through the whole audition, or does he say, I want my friend to be in there, or how's that work?
Well, I think the hangover was from Zach and I doing different shows. We would do Largo. I would say specifically Largo.
Okay.
So we would be performing at, that's one of the top hipster room, if you want to call it, here in L.A. You know, it's a little bit more.
Fellow Philly friend Paul Tompkins. We used to do comedy together. He used to be there all the time.
Oh, yeah, he still is. And so I was performing there a little bit. Not right away, but after a year or two, I got in. And I would be on shows with Zach, and I would host most of them. And I would just banter back and forth with Zach. And I would do my set, and then I would banter with him. And Todd Phillips, I guess, was there a bunch of times. The director of The Hangover was watching Zach and looking for, you know, to see if he could be in the movie. He was kind of like interested in Zach. But I was there, they saw me, and then I started hearing people say, Todd Phillips thinks you're funny, you should have a meeting with him. So this is way before The Hangover. So Zach got The Hangover, as far as I know, at that point, and then they brought me in for an audition.
Okay.
So I did audition for Hangover. I auditioned for a couple different parts, and then in the middle of the audition, Todd Phillips tells me, he says, I really want you to be in this movie. So he gave me another part to read for. He gave me a little coach to work with right there in the audition. I came back in, and it felt all right, like I did an okay job, but not great. And then about a week later, I got a call that they offered me a role in Hangover for a police officer. So that was like, okay, cool.
Right, you got a movie now.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea the movie would be what it ended up being, you know, huge classic hit.
Right.
But I did have to audition, but I knew that the director already liked me.
So it was easier. So once you got that, and you had the other TV shows, did you start getting, was it easier to get stage time? Was it easier? I mean, you're in a movie, your movie becomes a hit. I mean, where did your career go from there?
I kept doing warm up, you know, I was working at Best Damn Sports still. So I worked, I liked doing warm up. It paid my bills. It was mic time and I was able to go out at night and do stand-up, but I kept doing that, basically. And then once Best Damn Sports Show disbanded, I took a little time off, not much, but then I ended up going to Chelsea Lately.
Now, did you do warm-up for Chelsea?
I did warm-up over there, yeah. They needed a warm-up, and I came in there, and it was just folding chairs and some paid audience. It wasn't like what it is now, and I basically brought my energy, what I've done on all these other shows. I brought it there and kind of had to find my footing and ended up really having a great job over there. That was different than Best Damn. Best Damn was a lot of high schools and football teams and regular people, whereas Chelsea, they're there to see Chelsea, and there's a lot of girls in the audience, a lot of blonde girls. So it really, yeah, it forced me to kind of be a little more likable. You know, it's a little different experience. A little more likable, not as harsh. But the show was easier. It was quicker. I mean, I had to get them pumped up and fired up, but it was easier. And I liked the experience there. You know, it's different than Best Damn. I like them both.
Now, why did you stop working there? Just around course or?
Well, I stopped working there. I kind of had a bad experience. I was butting heads with the producers. I was kind of maybe growing out of the position of warm-up because, okay. Yeah, I got into Hangover. Then I got Due Date. Then I got Hangover 2. So I had three movies that I had done, essentially. It was two, actually. It was Hangover. It was Due Date. So I had Hangover and Due Date, two movies. And I was doing festivals here and there, some cool things. And I was just kind of growing out of the warm-up a little bit. Chelsea would put me on the show for Roundtable, and I did some other little TV things, nothing much. But I was kind of growing out of the position, and then one day I kind of butted heads with one of the producers, and I ended up quitting the next day.
Okay.
I kind of quit out of, you know, it was kind of a reactionary situation. I mean, I felt I was going to get fired. I had been warned before about a couple things, like, you know, being hard on the audience, like I've had everywhere. But so I didn't feel I was on thin ice, but I felt like when that happened and the way I acted, because I thought I had a little bit of leeway, being that I had done 400 shows, I was there for 3 years, but I had no, you know, I was just a warm-up. Last guy to be hired, first guy to be fired. And I felt like I was on thin ice, and then the way I handled that situation wasn't the most professional or mature. So I ended up quitting. And that was a bummer because I went from being a part of this family to being an outsider. So one, I wasn't getting that weekly check. Two, I wasn't getting the weekly mic time. And three, it hurt. You know, Chelsea was also putting me on the show. And then it hurt, you know, in terms of I was a part of something there. I got along with everybody. They liked having me there. It was a family. I'd go to the Christmas parties, go to the events, things of that nature. And then when I was gone, it was like I was just gone, like, see you later. And that bothered me a little bit. And bothered me probably for about a year and a half, okay, 2 years, until I ended up having Chelsea on my TV show to kind of reconcile. But I never had issues with Chelsea.
Right.
It was issues with producers.
Now, you said earlier, and I saw about you had a breakdown. What happened with that? Because did you really get arrested? I mean, they showed, like, I saw you. Because if you don't know people, the show, it's really, I mean, it was really good. It's really I saw the first episode. It's really put well together. I mean, it's just, it's very, very watchable. I mean, it's really enjoyable. It's one of those things you sit there.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's perfect. And plus, you know, so what happened? I mean, because I'm just after the first episode. So were you just losing it? Were you going off the deep end? Or just, because we all have those situations. I mean, what happened with that?
Well, I'd been on Lexapro, which is an antidepressant, anti-anxiety. for about 5 years, and it worked. Before that, I was on Celexa, which was an antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and that worked. And then I stopped taking the Celexa, and I started feeling a little weird, and I went on the Lexapro. So I was on Lexapro for 5 years. And I was feeling good about it, and that means it's working. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like when you feel like it's you, when you can't tell something's, when you feel good but you can't tell it, you know, you don't feel medicated, that means it's working.
Okay.
So, but with Lexapro, you can't really drink. I had to pee a lot. I couldn't really completely, like, I couldn't party with my friends. You could smoke pot, but couldn't really.
See, I'm going through that because I have a few months ago I was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. So I have to take a diuretic, which I pee a lot. And then, like, the one Korg I take, you really can't drink. And I used to love drinking. You can, but for me, it just hits me. I get, like, real tired. And I'm like, wow, then I didn't drink for a while. It's like 3 beers. And I'm like, holy crap. So it's just, it changes because, I mean, we're comics. It's just that's a lifestyle. It's not that everyone drinks hard, but everyone hangs out and bullshits and has drinks. So it must have been a little different for you.
Yeah. I mean, if I had anywhere more than 3 beers, I would get nauseous. So I was taking the Lexapro and I was working at Chelsea, and that I finished up with that. And I remember I was doing the Hangover 2 in Bangkok. And that's where I started thinking about, like, maybe I can wean myself off these meds a little bit. And I didn't have a doctor other than my general practitioner. I wasn't seeing a psychologist. I didn't have a psychiatrist. And I was thinking, like, maybe I can get off this because I feel like I'm ready to do that. So I started doing more festivals, started booking more festivals through my booking agent. And I'm not doing warm up.
What are some of the festivals you did?
I did South by Southwest. Okay. I did Sled Island, which is a popular one in Calgary. I went to Ireland. I did Montreal.
So you're getting a big national. I mean, it's national. I mean, it's something that's great for your career.
Yeah. I mean, these festivals are good. You know, it's not like I'm headlining them, but it's a good experience, definitely. Portland, Bridgetown Comedy Festival. I did that a few times. I did the San Francisco Sketch Fest. I did festivals around here, the F Yeah Fest. I've done, you know, some other ones too.
Right.
I went back to Chicago. They had that. So the breakdown basically happened. I was feeling fine. The only thing that was, like, bugging me negatively was still, it irked me as to how I left Chelsea. You know, that bothered me a little bit, but not to the point where it bummed me out more than depressed me. And I was having good things happening. Zach always wanted to work with me on this HBO, on some kind of TV show.
Right.
You know, he'd always tell me that he always thought my relationship with my mom and my sister was interesting. And he always wanted to film something about it. So that was always, like, in the back of my mind. And then when I was done doing warm-up, Zach said, why don't we pitch some shows and see if we can do this? You know, now I'm not doing warm-up. I'm not constrained to that. So I didn't feel any, I was feeling fine. I didn't have any stress or anything. I was, like, happy about it. So I went to Ireland, and I was a 12-day trip, 5 days in Ireland and, like, 7 days in Montreal. So I went straight from Ireland, never been overseas before, that direction, never done comedy over there. And I did well. I did well in Ireland. And I was rationing a little bit on my Lexapro. Not okay. Much, but just a little bit so I could drink and have a good time. That was kind of in my mind. It was also in
it's Ireland. You got to drink beers in Ireland. It's like,
yeah.
it's a given.
But I wasn't really, I didn't stop my meds cold turkey at that point. Then I go to Montreal, and I get there. I'm feeling great. And the second day I'm there, I just get sick. I got sick as a dog, like 24-hour flu, strep throat, just the worst sickness I've had in a long time. Looking back on it, that may have been a withdrawal reaction
okay.
to me cutting back on the Lexapro a little bit. It took just a little bit of me cutting back for, if it was withdrawal, to have that happen to me. Because you can go through, like, flu-like symptoms if you stop your meds
okay.
or cut them down. So I got super sick for 2 days. Couldn't talk. Could barely swallow. Wasn't taking my vitamins. Didn't even take my Lexapro. I just couldn't even swallow. So I went downstairs, and I saw the doctor, and he said I had strep throat. and he gave me an antibiotic. This is in Montreal. So he gave me an antibiotic. He said, you'll feel better in 24 hours. I took it. The next day, I felt better. I go, my mind is clear, and I feel good. And I felt at that point, you know what? Maybe I'll just stay off the Lexapro.
Okay.
Because I was feeling great. I went from, like, having the flu, and I felt great up until the flu, had the flu. Then I was on this antibiotic, and I felt great. So I felt like, you know what, maybe I'm, the Lexapro is out of my system, or I can stop taking it. Because my mind felt great.
Right. You felt free. It felt open. It's like, I don't need this, because your body, you were feeling happy. You were feeling good about yourself.
Correct. And a little more energy and happy. And I knew that I was happy because I went to Ireland and I did well. I went to Montreal and I'd never been to that festival before and I was enjoying it other than being sick. And once I got over the sickness, I still had great shows and a great time at the festival. So I was feeling good. So I went back to LA, and the minute I got back, a couple of my friends saw me, and they said, Brody, what's with you? You're acting strange a little bit. Like, I'm not being myself. Like, what are you, on cocaine? I go, no, I'm just happy. I was actually happy,
right,
knowing that I did Ireland, I did Montreal, and I had this HBO show in my back pocket, which they bought. They ordered 6 15-minute episodes.
So at this time, you already knew you had the two great festivals, and you already knew you had the HBO thing.
Correct.
Okay, so then that'd make anyone happy.
I was happy.
Right.
And they asked me to host TMZ. I was on TMZ like 4 straight weeks.
My girlfriend Joanne, she loves the show, and I said, I'll send you a picture of him, because we can take a picture after the show. I was with my guest, because she watched. She goes, I know, I don't know who he is. And I said, you're great, and it was fun. It was good.
Right, it was fun. And
how'd that come about? They just knew you, or they just said, this guy's a good host, or how that, you know?
Hangover 2, the premiere party, I talked to the cameras going in, and they put it on the air that night or the next night, and Harvey Levin, the leader of it, said, this guy's funny, he's from the Valley, just like me, I kind of like get a kick out of him. So he said, you know, they said that on the TV. And then the next week, I was at the Improv, boom, there's the camera, I talk into it, give a little rant, boom, they put it on. They say, yeah, we like this Brody guy. The next week, I'm at the Comedy Store, same thing, put me on, I do a little rant. And then the next week, they put me on 4 straight weeks. I was on TMZ, and they were saying good things about me. So then I got a call from my agent, and she said that TMZ wants you to host the show. Do you want to do it? And a couple of my friends said, don't do it. But I wanted to do it.
Right.
So that was scheduled. So that's another thing that I had in my back pocket. Like, I'm going to get to host TMZ, go in there like Harvey Levin and be that guy.
All the years of your hard work are really paying off now. I mean, everything's amazing for you. I mean, you have a lot of stuff going on.
Correct. And I'm feeling good. And I'm off my Lexapro.
Now, you were off it. Did you feel, was there a different physical feeling or anything for you? Or, and when you got off it completely, did you ever worry that I'm off it, something might happen? And did that
No.
Okay.
Didn't cross my mind. So I stayed off it, not knowing that you're supposed to stop at cold turkey. It just didn't enter my mind. And that may have been from traveling and being sick, and I'm on an antibiotic and I seem to be feeling pretty good. I didn't really wean off. And I knew you could supposed to wean off, but I was kind of like not into it. And I felt like I got sick, and then I got on that antibiotic and I felt better. And my mind was clear. And then when I came back to LA, I remember I went to the Dodger game. I felt fine. And then the next day I went and saw my mom down in Palm Springs. And then I came back. And then that's when I saw. Now I've been off it for probably 6 days.
Okay.
Taking antibiotics. No Lexapro. Essentially cold turkey. And I remember Zach saw me and he said, like, what are you on, cocaine? You're not acting yourself. I go, Zach, I'm happy.
Right, right, right.
I got all these good things happening. So then we went back to his house and some more of that, discussion was going on about me, not being myself. And I didn't tell him I was off my meds. I was just saying, I'm happy. I'm celebrating. Martin, my agent, said, have a good time. Enjoy these times. That's what I was doing. So then that happened. And then I started, like, Zach left me a message and that kind of upset me. And then I hosted the TMZ, And that gave me some, like, extra confidence. Like, I did well on it. Right. I knocked it out of the park. And then it, like, that, like, fed my confidence. Like, I'm on top of the world. I'm Mr. TMZ guy. And that's when people started seeing, like, okay, this Brody's a little bit out of character. I was bragging. And I also felt like, okay, I did TMZ. I'm with them now.
Okay.
And so anybody who was a jerk to me before, you know, F you. So I went on Twitter and I was telling, you know, saying like, F you to this guy who was a jerk to me. I'm on TMZ now. Don't.
You know, I think it's because I follow you on Twitter. I think I saw those, some of those posts, because your posts are usually real positive and just real energetic. They were just, so you just were venting out at people.
Venting out at people that I felt like that I had a window to do that. Everybody was a jerk to me the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, I felt like it'd say, F you, I made it, or I'm making it. And that's out of character for me. So as people started seeing those tweets, and that kind of like raised eyebrows. And then I started getting a little combative. I went to a party. Well, I was going down to the Angel game in Anaheim, and I remember I could feel the pressure coming on in terms of people thinking something's wrong with me. So I saw this guy in the parking lot, a young guy. I go, are you on Twitter? He goes, yeah. I go, I need you to say something positive about, like, Brody Stevens brought me beer. He's a good guy. And okay. He was, like, freaked out by that, basically. And I ended up yelling at him.
Well, I think it also is because you're an imposing figure. You're a big guy. If I went on that, they'd be like, yeah, get out of here. But for you, you're a big guy.
Yeah, I guess so. So he kind of like freaked out by it because, you know, a stranger comes up to him and starts saying, can you buy a beer? I'll buy beer for you if you tweet about it. So it was like I was starting to like become more manic. You know, that's not normal behavior. And then I went to the Angel game that night. I drove down there. I'm feeling great, by the way. I'm feeling euphoric. I'm feeling happy. And I go down to the Angel game and I remember I had a field pass and I was kind of like aggressive on the field, like walking up to the dugouts before the game, and I've gone down to the field a lot because I have friends in baseball, and I know how to behave. I kind of like stay in my area, but here I was being more pushy, and something was not right, but I felt good. So I went back up, and I watched the game. The guys from TMZ were there. We watched the game, and then later that night, I went to a party, Sarah Silverman's house, and I went to the party, and I basically was not acting myself. Like, I cornered a couple people and telling them, like, I was just talking and saying, I got great things happening, this and that, and I feel good. And it was just, again, out of character.
Right.
And then people started talking, like, Brody's acting weird. He's cornering people and talking to them. But some people thought it was funny. I was still being funny, but I was also being talking a lot.
Right.
And being not aggressive, but, you know, cornering people. So that was like on a Saturday night. And then on Sunday, I started getting calls from friends saying, like, well, are you okay? What's going on? And that kind of upset me, like, that they're questioning how I'm feeling. I'm feeling great.
Right, right.
And so I went back on Twitter, and I started saying, my friends think I'm crazy or whatever. I'm feeling great. And that would raise red flags. And then they sent the cops to my house the first time. Like on a Monday night, they sent the cops to my house. Saturday was a party. Sunday I was tweeting some. And then Monday, the cops are at my house. And I go, like, outside my apartment. And they said, we got a call. Are you doing okay? Are you, like, homicidal or suicidal? I go, no, I'm happy.
Right.
I go, I just hosted TMZ. I was in the hangover. I'm doing great. So one of the cops was pretty cool. He was, like, laughing. The other cop was, like, not being cool. He was kind of, like, looking at me. And I went up to the cop. I said, can I talk to the other cop? He goes, yeah. I go, why are you giving me a bad attitude? You don't like Jewish people? Is that what it is? You know, I work out. I go, why don't you take off your badge and belt and meet me out back and we can fight? I said that to him. And he, like, backed down from me. He didn't, like, you know, I didn't get in trouble for saying that. I did say that. And then they kind of, like, went their own way. So I went back on Twitter. And I said, they just sent the cops to my house. This guy was a jerk. That guy was a jerk. I was just tweeting out. That irritated me that they sent the cops. The phone calls from my friends worried about me irritated me. I felt like if you're not with me, you're against me. Basically, what I was showing was traditional manic episode behavior.
Right, okay.
If you look at the list of what manic is, I was having it. I was doing it. And then my tweets got a little more darker, whatever. And then on Tuesday, I went to the Coffee Bean on Coldwater, not the Coffee Bean, the Starbucks on Coldwater. And I would see somebody, like the guy was on his laptop, and I was being overly friendly. And if somebody wasn't friendly back to me, I would say, like, F you, why are you not friendly? I'm a good guy. You know, you're trying to make it in this business, and you're writing scripts. That you'll never make it because you're not a nice guy. I do things in this town. I work for TMZ. I was in the Hangover. Right. Just like out of character stuff, yelling. And I remember I said, this guy's a jerk. Just yelling at this guy in Starbucks. So he told the barista, like, this guy's harassing me. So I went and sat back outside. And then I actually went back and yelled. And I go, I'm waiting for you out here. And then some other guy said, why don't you just relax? I go, you relax. And then I go, okay, I'm sorry. I, like, apologize. I didn't want to have any kind of altercation or fight. I was just, like, talking. Yeah.
Right.
So I sat back outside, and then about 10 minutes later, you hear the sirens coming. It's the police, who I saw the night before.
Right.
This was a different set of police officers, and they handcuffed me right there on, you know, outside. And it's like, I go, and I was talking to some other people outside, and I said, guys, film this.
Right.
Film this. I'm being arrested. And she goes, no, you're being detained. And they kind of, like, searched me right there in Coldwater and Ventura, right there at the Starbucks. And I was such in a state of mind that I didn't care. It was like a reality show for me. You know, I was going manic. I was manic. So they handcuffed me, and they pulled me over to the side, and I basically told them, I told him everything about what was going on, and they ended up, like, not siding with me, but they knew I wasn't a danger, but right. They knew I was acting a little off. And then their supervisor came by, and he basically brought me off the side, and he said, did you promise not to cause any problems again? I go, yes, I promise. I'm just, like, having a rough go at it right now. But I wasn't having a rough go. I was happy. Well, I'm happy. So he took the handcuffs off me, and at that point, I was free to go. So he let me go. Then I went back on Twitter, and at that point, my friends were kind of, like, already getting together, like, okay, Brody needs an intervention.
Okay.
And that's when they sent me to the hospital the next day. So Tuesday, I was detained at the Starbucks, went back on Twitter, and that kind of, like, put the wheels in motion for my friends to get the LAPD involved, to get me to UCLA Medical Center.
But now you're fine. You're back on the meds?
Well, I'm back on meds, but I'm not fine.
I know.
I mean,
But you're not as manic, but then your career's still going great.
My career is good. Definitely, like, I've had some great things happen, but I'm not manic. I'm on meds. I'm not manic, but I'm dealing with the opposite end of that right now, and that could be for another discussion another time about...
I would love to have you come back. I see you have great stories.
You know, about... I'm, like, depressed now.
Okay.
Going through that. Whenever you have a manic episode, for whatever reason, I feel like my manic episode came from stopping the meds cold turkey and maybe some positive pressures and traveling, but it didn't come out of... If I was on my meds and I had a manic episode, I'd be convinced, okay, I'm bipolar. Something's got to be done. But I stopped taking my meds cold turkey. You throw in the antibiotic. You throw in travel, possibly. That kind of, like, triggered it. So it's a manic episode, but I'm still coming to grips with the bipolar definition. But the deal is, I'm not manic at all. I'm very happy. I'm very peaceful. But I'm kind of, like, down.
Okay.
And that's the opposite end. If you have a manic episode, almost 100% of the times you have a depressive episode. And that's kind of what I'm dealing with now and trying to get back to the middle, get back to where I want to be.
Okay. We got to wrap up. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Great stories. I love this. Why I love this job. I meet great people and great stories. Give people all your info so they can get in touch with you.
They can get in touch with me on Twitter. Brody is me friend on Twitter. Me is an homage to Tony and Mr. Lee, my Albanian and Chinese bus boys. Brody, you good guy. You me friend. So Brody is me friend on Twitter. You could also email me if you want at brody@brodystevens.com, brody@brodystevens.com. And I've got a podcast also, the Stephen Brody Stevens Festival of Friendship. You can find that on iTunes. And then I do shows around LA and hopefully get back into traveling some more and doing some of those shows. And we're waiting to see about a season two of HBO's Enjoy It. Hopefully it will happen. Nothing's guaranteed, but there are some discussions.
Well, great. I want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Check him out. People follow me at Cooper Talk on Twitter. Cooper at Indie100, INDIE100.com. Listen for me every Thursday night at midnight, 3 o'clock East Coast time on the Big Daddy Graham Show, calling in and talking about Hollywood. And find past episodes at www.coopertalk.net or on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn Radio. Have a great weekend. I'm Steve Cooper.